Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Pensacola, Florida, it's time for Pensacola Business Radio. Now, here are your Business Radio X hosts.
Hey, good afternoon. It's another episode of Pensacola Business Radio. I have three really amazing guests in the studio today. I'd like to introduce Andy Dyke with
Hello.
Have Wind, Will Travel. Because the other title you have is way too long.
Totally.
Yeah.
Go with the short
one. I have Lee Hansen, who happens to be my neighbor here in DeVille Square at the Global Corner. Welcome.
Thanks.
And I have Kathy Holsworth from Pensacola Little Theater.
Great to be here.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming in.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
So let's, Andy, let's talk about. Okay. So let me just give some background
20
here.
20 hats.
I didn't know Andy prior to, and I don't know how you came across my Facebook page, but the picture or the video I think I got was you hanging from the mast of the sailboat in the silk sort of Cirque du Soleil kind of.
I tend to do that.
Yeah. So, and then I started, you know, checking it out and saw the Have Wind Will Travel. And
the silks usually hook people. I'm not sure why.
It's a pretty cool thing. My kids love it. They really do. There's a group that sets up on the beach. Sometimes at bands on the beach.
I wonder if that's the folks that I'm usually with. It's his name's Garrett. He was my instructor when I started, and they usually hang near the pier over there.
Yeah. So, and I had some red silks up. My kids were just totally fascinated with it. So tell us about Have Wind, Will Travel and all the other. You got your hands in a lot of baskets.
It's hard to keep up. Havewindwilltravel.com. Add that so they can definitely find it. It's a website that I started about 2.5-3 years ago. It started out as a blog. Most sailors and cruisers that you meet have blogs. It's trending kind of like a little dog. Like everybody has a blog.
It's like a diary.
It is. It's a cool thing. But
with more than 140 characters.
Exactly. I can't be limited. You
That's
know?
Right.
But I started it when we were going to get our sailboat, which was the premise of my first book. It was down in Punta Gorda, Florida, and we went down there to sail it back across the Gulf. My very first passage. Super epic, in my opinion, of everything that went wrong and trying to just kind of survive the Gulf and get back. But I loved it, fell in love with it, and I sort of chronicled from then. The minute it actually goes back to shopping and finding our boat, and then we found it and sailed it home. So that sort of sparked the writing bug, and the blog has been going ever since. I post three posts a week on havewindwilltravel.com, and I just started the YouTube channel. It was about 2 months
Yeah,
ago.
Those are fun, aren't they?
They're fun. We've actually found out that Video Annie, quote unquote, has to be put on probation often because I can't trust what comes out of my mouth. I'm actually nervous to be here live right now.
Well, you know, you're good. And one of the things, it's hard. Sometimes you have to do scripts. Even though you don't want to.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm not scripting. I'm just going to shoot from the hip.
I'm totally fine.
But then you're like, which I think is why Annie was on probation, right?
It's because she said fancy dancing.
Yeah, that was
8 times in one take. So, yeah, she got banned.
So, I mean, you're just hooked. Like, you got on the boat and decided, well,
literally,
first you thought, you figured since it wasn't going to be delivered, you had to go get it, right?
Yeah, the story is that the boat was down in Punta Gorda, Florida. My first question was, so when are they going to deliver it?
Yeah.
It's a big boat. You can't really deliver one like that. So we had to go down there and sail it back. And that was my first passage ever, first experience.
Really? On a sailboat?
I had one time on a boat we looked at for like a 1 hour sail, but that was it my entire life. Like that was the first time we were untying the lines and really going out in what they called, you know, blue water.
Yeah.
So it was quite the experience. And I wrote the book, Salt of a Sailor, was my first nonfiction book. Has done well, surprisingly, probably because I screwed up on all the first books.
That's all right.
Figured
it's
out what I was
curve.
Doing. And yeah, so I just kind of learned as I went. Marketing is really my big thing now. And it was definitely a learning curve. Like I said, we start my whole history. It'll take forever. But it started with a previous book. I used to be a lawyer. I practiced in Mobile, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I shouldn't say used to be. I still have that dusty degree. I don't know what it does for
it's,
me
in
now.
A former life?
In a former life. I was a lawyer, and when I decided to leave the practice, writing was the goal. So I wrote this really exciting book on hourly billing. You need to go to sleep. Yeah, big time. It's fun. I actually tried to make it kind of funny. I mean, I tried to put a little spin in there, but it's something that a lot of lawyers struggle with. I don't know if you guys know lawyers or have friends, but it's
I know a certain CPA in my life that has that same where you have to just account for every minute, and it that's your dollar, right?
It's, I mean, yeah. I mean, if you don't put it on paper, you don't get paid, you know, and it's kind of a, it's an unfortunate struggle for a young attorney because they're struggling enough with learning how to even practice law without committing right. malpractice every day. And then they're supposed to log it on a timesheet and every 6 minutes. And so the book was meant to help them do that. But the funny thing was I self-published it and put it on the internet. And the day it went live, I thought it was just going to fly off the shelves, just selling the thousands.
Just gone,
like,
huh?
Oh, man, I'm going to go right to the Bahamas. I think it sold like 2 in a month. And I was like, why don't people know about this? Like,
right.
Why aren't they just Googling it and finding it? Yeah. So I learned a ton about like SEO and marketing and all that kind of jazz. But long story short, that led me to do marketing for other clients. Like I picked up a lot of skills and thought, well, this is something I can do remotely.
Sure.
So I have 2 or 3 clients now that I do all of their social media marketing. And then that translates to my own marketing for both the book now that's out, Salt of a Sailor. My second one's coming out soon. My YouTube channel, all that stuff.
Sure.
And it makes a lot of things business expenses.
Yeah, I have learned that.
It's fun having
that
a sailing business.
So in let's talk about the marketing stuff that you do. I mean, are you specific to any style of client or are you, is it whoever wants to talk about it and get their market out?
Who's out there needs marketing.
Yeah.
I
think Lee just raised her hand, so you're probably pretty good.
I can't hear that. I started out with legal clients just because that was my world.
Sure.
That was where all my contacts were. So the business is called Legalite, and I did it. The first one was a court reporter in Mobile. She was a really good friend, and I actually still work for her to this day, and it's been a phenomenal pairing. She's great business for her. Most small businesses don't want to mess with the marketing. Like, they want to do their job. They want to produce their widgets, what we say in the lawyer world.
Right.
They want to just, you know, do what they do, and they don't want to deal with all this Facebook stuff, this Twitter, this kind of craziness out there. But you bring someone in like me and you don't have to do it. It just happens. You know, it just takes care of itself. And so that's where I started there, but then I did it. Actually, how you did hear about me was a Coastal Lifestyle magazine.
That's right. It still came across Facebook though.
Yep.
And I had to investigate because you just never know who you're talking to these days.
Exactly. I saw your name and I remember that guy. But I did it for Coastal Lifestyle magazine for a while. I have 2 other clients now that I do it for just remotely. One actually recently kind of turned up IMS Expert Services.
Mm-hmm.
They're based here in Pensacola.
Mm-hmm.
And funny thing was I met Bill, the owner of that company, at Pirates Cove, like at this huge party. And we're just kind of on the docks late one night. But he turned into like a fabulous business contact. So I'm like, see, drinks at Pirates Cove are business related.
Yeah, take them sailing.
Totally. But I write blogs for them now. And so that
pulls
on my legal background to do. They're an expert referral service. So that's been actually kind of one of my more fortuitous finds, but otherwise it's just fun Facebook marketing. I do the Facebook, LinkedIn, and all the social media blogs that they need to do, constant contact, all that.
So I think I saw one of your posts. I don't remember which of those things it was on, but it was, I'm going to work in the morning, but I'm definitely playing by 2, right?
Oh yeah.
So let's talk about that because you have a pretty adventurous side to you that I see only because it comes across Facebook, but Salt of the Sailor has a lot of that in it, right? I mean, that's you're on a boat. You're coming across the Gulf. I know you do the silk stuff. I know you do the – what's the parachute?
I was going to say kite surfing.
The kite surfing.
That's a really fun one.
Have you done paragliding?
I haven't done paragliding because I guess if you power yourself, it's even more fun.
Yeah. So
– yeah, I Salt of a Sailor actually covers probably just a little bit more of the sailing and cruising, which we do as much as we possibly can. We hope to, in the next few years, sort of start going 3 months, 6 months, and actually just finally go. That's just a transition we're working into because we want to make sure we have enough money to stay out there.
Yeah.
And but that's the cruising part. We also kite surf, which was a huge thing. Philip, my boyfriend, got me into that about 2.5 years ago. And it was a lot of face plants and bottom plants.
Yeah,
and,
I've seen some of them not so well with the wind.
Yeah, it's powerful. Like, the kite is so powerful. One of my first runs was a big funny joke, but I was going and I was finally doing it and I'm watching the kite because you watch the kite. It's like you're strapped to an elephant and you're on a skateboard. I mean, it's out of control. So you're watching it. And I kited myself right onto shore and just belly all across the seaweed and dirt. And nobody saw me. So I was like, okay, I'm good. Phillip's like, you're all right.
You were into a boat.
No.
Which I could see how easily that could happen.
that could happen too. You gotta look out for him. But he was like, he said, are you all right? And I'm like, why? What are you talking about? He's like, look at your front side, and it's like mud, dirt, seaweed, and like swamp thing. And I'm like, oh, I just ran out of water.
However, sand is
it's a problem, you know. I
mean, sand is still softer than asphalt. So
very true. But kite surfing is really fun. The aerial silks, the kind of Cirque du Soleil thing you're talking about. A good friend of mine, Stephanie, got me into that about a year and a half ago. And just a gymnastics background, I love to play. Right. She just kind of thought it's something I would enjoy. And I loved it, but I didn't know it could be done on a sailboat until I met another friend who is doing it on a sailboat. And I thought, oh boy, like worlds colliding. Like,
yeah.
It's going to be epic. So I started hanging them on our sailboat, and it's really fun. It's easy to rig them up. I mean, there's a big mast and all kinds of lines.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like a playground. So I do it on the boat. And the funny thing was, the friend who started that, the Aerial Silks, her parents have a boat in the Bahamas, and they invited me to come out and do an Abaco's regatta just this past year. And so again, I'm like, see, Silks is business related.
Yeah.
Like,
see, you're totally getting immersed in all
so
this stuff.
So just everything just kind of starts synergy and pulling together. And it's been really, really fun.
And I think that's what attracted me to the blog and the post that you had, is that it wasn't just, oh, I'm on a sailboat and this is what it's like to be on a sailboat. You've really incorporated aspects of your life, very adventurous aspects of your life, into it's a brand. I see it as a brand.
I hope so. That's the plan. Thank you.
I really do. I mean, I see it as a brand. You've got some really cool things in it, and it makes it interesting. And your videos are fun to watch. And
well, you know,
I haven't read the book yet, but you just left me a couple on the shelf.
There you go. One
of those may end up going home,
hot off the press. You know? But it is. It's about the writing and just sharing the experience. I think a lot of people would love to do the things that we do, maybe not all of them, but maybe some of them. But it's about inspiring other people too. You know, you don't have to work 10 hours a day to kind of enjoy the things in your life that you want. You can get out there and you know, start to immerse yourself in that lifestyle as much as you can and try to get to that goal.
Yeah. Was it Sweden today that went to a 6-hour work day?
Isn't that nice?
I know.
Like so, I said, 2 p.m., I'm done.
But here was the debate I was thinking. If it was an 8-hour work day and you were wasting 2 hours of the water cooler or whatever, is it now a 4-hour work day?
Technically.
Right? So
yeah, I'll just work efficiently, man.
Yep.
Well, and that's sort of the concept. So you got 6 hours, get it done, go home and get out of here, or go with Annie and go sailing.
if we could just validate that at an administrative level of saying, yes, actually your work is done, you may leave.
That's right.
Instead of saying, oh, wait to clock out.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree with that wholeheartedly. I don't know that I could be put in an office environment now. I'm not sure what I would do, but just I kind of hate the wasted day. The practice of law was very interesting.
Sure.
But very hostile, very consuming. But a lot of it is you have to deal with people every day. You got to talk to them on the phone. You got to interact. You have to deal with this kind of HR office stuff that
and
I felt like
you have to account for every minute of it. Too.
Yeah. And also
there's
do
a
all
book
the work.
About that too.
Oh, did you? Have you heard of it? But it's just something that I thought was unproductive. I think that's the best way to put it, Kathy, is that it's not efficient, you know, and so I can do a ton more work in 4 hours in my little tomb of silence than I can in an office
setting. And then when you are out with people and interacting, you're doing fun things.
Exactly. I'm working.
Yeah, right.
Very
says,
hard.
Says the IRS.
Yes. Are they listening?
No. Okay, Annie, let's let everybody know where they can find you, get in touch with you. I mean, let's direct them where you want them to go.
I guess. Havewindwilltravel.com. You just have to put the .com on there. But that's the hub. It has the YouTube channel link is there, Patreon, the Amazon books, everything. That's the center hub. I post 3 times a week. Facebook, I just kind of all the time, pictures all the time, just to entertain people and get them interested. My whole point is, you know, are you curious about cruising? Then come aboard, because we're happy to show you what it's like. And
well, I guess I shouldn't ask you where you're docked, because then everybody's going to come and see your boat.
Yeah,
but you are here local. I mean, the boat is local, here locally in Pensacola?
Yes.
We'll leave the rest of that a mystery.
They're going to be out there looking for
stuff. Go to havewindwilltravel.com. You'll find it. You'll figure it out. So. Well, Annie, stick around.
Oh,
thanks
definitely.
For, you know, coming in. Feel free to chime in as we continue, but I'm totally impressed with what you've done over the last year and a half. Very cool.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. The book, I just will say the second one coming out, it's called Keys to the Kingdom, and it follows the whole transformation from corporate lawyer sitting in an office every day to where I'm at now. So
awesome.
That should be a real fun story.
See, that's great. Maybe you can write my book.
You can't afford me. There you go.
Hey.
I bill by the hour.
I thought it was by the minute. There's a book on that.
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, let's move on to Lee Hansen. You have been my neighbor for a couple weeks now.
Yes, right down the hallway.
And I think you told me what you did, but then I had forgotten. And so when Annie asked today, I was like, okay, great. Cool, because I didn't remember. So
exactly.
Tell us, because you're here in the DeVillers community. What do you do?
I am. I run an organization called The Global Corner, and we teach kids about other countries and cultures. So each year we focus on a different country. We take the activities and lessons into the schools and try to get kids fired up about what's going on in the rest of the world. One of the things that happened when I was, I grew up living in different countries and, as an adult, joined the Navy and saw the world. And I noticed that a lot of my friends didn't know very much about the rest of the world. And I also discovered that with kids, we are not actually teaching them very much. We're not teaching.
It's America. We don't need to go anywhere.
Exactly. We don't need to know geography because we have right. our iPhones and there's a GPS. And so I tried to think when I retired, what could I possibly do that would change that, would get kids interested? And so I went from flying jets in the Navy to teaching kids. And,
wait a second. You flew jets in the Navy?
Yes.
You didn't put that on the sheet? That's awesome.
Oh, well, okay.
Oh, that's right. I know we're talking about the Global Corner, but that's really cool.
Yeah. So it was a fairly easy transition just because...
You're not at Mach 3 anymore.
I can probably say this in this town at least. Being around a bunch of aviators is a lot like being around a bunch of children. And so...
See, now she used to be one, so that's okay to come from her.
Right?
So.
But anyway, we are in our ninth year, which is amazing to me.
Wow.
It just keeps going. And
how long have you been here in DeVillers?
About 6 months.
Okay.
Was working out of my home for the first 8.5 years.
That's hard.
Years,
I've done that for a little bit.
Way hard. And
motivation does not exist.
Yeah. You know, oh, I think I need to go dust. You know, I'll do anything yeah. rather than get this job done. Right. But one of the things that we found is that we take these lessons into the schools. Kids get so excited about it.
Sure.
Each child gets a little passport. They get it stamped for each activity that
oh,
they do.
Cool.
Right.
And kids, it means an incredible adventure to them. So I was in one school and this one little boy came up to me and he reached down and in his sock, he had his little passport. And he had gone like 3 or 4 days before. And he said, I've got one of these passports, you know, and he was going to tell me
yeah.
about it. So I thought, holy cow, this kid thinks, you know, he's really had an adventure.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's the kind of thing that happens when we go into the schools. And we've provided over 51,000 of these adventures in the first 8 years. So
wow.
we're trying to change the world.
So what counties are you operating in?
Escambia and Santa Rosa.
Okay. So if somebody wants to get you into that, how does that process work?
They can call me at the Global Corner, and that number is 332-6404, area code 850, of course. And we're also online, theglobalcorner.org.
Or they can stop by, pick up one of Annie's books, come say hello
exactly.
to you.
Perfect.
Drop me a business card.
Right down.
See,
the,
we're a hub.
Right down the hallway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what grade levels?
Right now, we're just in the elementary schools, but in a couple of the private schools, that goes up to eighth grade. So.
And then, which is great because we were just talking about this earlier. The younger, the better, right?
Absolutely.
I didn't learn Spanish till I think 10th grade. And there wasn't much sticking
right.
by then, you know.
Well,
I was struggling enough with math and history and the rest, and then
right.
you want to throw a foreign language in there with me.
When you teach a teenager, of course, they don't want to look stupid. They don't want to sound
right.
stupid. So they're not going to say anything. And we find with the kids, you know, the kindergartners, they just repeat what you say. They're not worried about,
sure.
you know,
there's
sounding
no preconceived
right
notions
or,
and
right,
all that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think is, what's the tool that you use? I mean, are you guys using audio stuff where they can hear the cultures talking or you?
We use all different kinds of things. Everything from, you know, we'll have video and different slideshows and things so that they can actually see things. We have one lesson that we always call just culture, and we create 3 children from that country. This year we're doing Australia. And so a child that lives in Melbourne. We have a child that lives in the outback on a sheep station. And we have a child that lives, an Aboriginal child that lives in the rainforest. And so we talk about what they do, what their life is like, what they eat, what their house looks like, what they study in school,
sure.
and that's things great. Like that. So kids can sort of go, oh, okay, well, we do the same. Oh, that's really different. Or, you know, so they can kind of compare and contrast.
You're going to make them eat Vegemite.
You know, we have a
that's
jar
a great
of it,
song, by the way.
But we don't make them eat it.
That's like spam. It's you're either in it or you're not. Oh, you know?
Yeah.
So what, I guess, how does this... How did it spawn for you? I think you just realized that this was a need. And then, so where do you see your organization in 10 to 15 years? So I know you don't want to go back to flying jets, do you?
Right. Yeah. I'm a little too old for that. Thanks. But what we're doing is this year we're trying to work to raise some funds to actually start a language lab in the after school programs. Because like you mentioned, and like everybody's heard, if you teach language at a really young age, it sticks. And so that's what we're in the process of doing. And eventually what we want to do is we really want to affect the future workforce of Northwest Florida. If we could create a multilingual workforce here, can you imagine?
How powerful that would be.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, we can attract international companies. We can attract local companies that want to do business overseas. So that's sort of the long-range goal.
Sounds like you and the Young Entrepreneurs Academy might need to have a conversation.
You know, I've been looking at some of the stuff in the paper and thinking.
I actually think we're going to have Terry Ramos here at some point once he answers the phone, because I know she's busy.
Excellent.
And we're doing the one of the kids that graduated, or he's still in it, but he's going to graduate. We did a radio show for him. So he now has a cupcake business.
Wow.
He'll have his own radio show. And he's got like his hands in like 3 other things. Kid's not even 18 yet. Just really, really good stuff. But could you imagine being able to do international business before you graduated high school?
It'd be great.
How powerful that could be?
Right.
You're in the right building, too. We've got all the cool things here.
I know. It is amazing.
Innovation Institute. We've got, you know.
The people you meet in the elevator and the stairwell, like, what do you do? Oh, my God. Really? Oh, cool.
Yeah. Well, you were my neighbor, and I had no idea.
Cards in my wallet, you know.
Flying jets. How can the people in the community help? Because, I mean, you're a nonprofit, right?
We are, in fact, nonprofit. And as I learned very early on, that holy cow, it's a lot harder than you would think.
Mm-hmm.
I come from a black and white world, you know, where you state the facts and people go, oh, got it, you know, and we press ahead. So I thought, hey, this makes perfect sense.
Sure.
It's really inexpensive. It can have a huge impact on a great number of kids who will grow up to be globally competent, you know. And like you with your book that sold 2 in a month, I was like, yeah, I'm waiting for these donations to roll in. I'm waiting companies to say, wow, this is fabulous. I want to sponsor a school, you know. So the way the community can help is help us get the word out. Become a sponsor of a school, become a sponsor of one of our events. We have fundraising events, which I will add, we are going to be having an Australian wine tasting in celebration of Australia.
Now you got my attention.
Yes, in January. So stay tuned.
Naomi is one of my favorite wines.
Do we all get to play characters from Australia and speak the different languages down there?
That would be great.
Will this be Vegemite?
Only for volunteers.
Yeah, there you go.
We probably won't put it in the food, yes.
Okay, so where's the fundraiser going to be?
It is actually going to be at the Opera Center.
Very
which nice. I have to figure out somehow that we can transform it into the Sydney Opera House, but I'm still working on that.
Maybe
that
some of the
really
silk
cool.
scarves that Annie has and a couple of tent poles and we can
there
figure it
go.
Out.
Happy to do a show.
Okay.
Whatever. Brings people
there
around.
I think I can hook you up with set designers who can make that
yeah,
happen.
Yeah, see, Kathy might know a couple people.
I am in the right place. Yeah.
Cool.
Excellent.
Let's give everybody your contact information so we can't ask them for help and then not tell them where to go.
Absolutely. Again, I'm Lee Hansen. At the Global Corner and theglobalcorner.org is our website. And our phone number is area code 850-332-6404.
And then, of course, I'll have all of y'all's. It's horrible.
All
of your businesses' links on our website as well.
Excellent.
I know, right? Here we go. Let's just dive right into it. So, well, Lee, thank you for coming in and hanging out, even though I know you only had to walk 10 feet.
I know. I had to
walk. It was valuable time.
The commute was horrible today. The traffic
went bad. So, and really cool because now I know what my neighbors do. So now I have to get the rest of the neighbors too. So
wonderful.
I know
that'd
we're all
great.
Bouncing around in and out, but I'd like to know what the other 12 offices on my floor do. So, hang out for a while. Yeah.
I sure will.
Okay, Kathy.
My turn.
Your turn. How are you?
Sure. I am excellent. I'm so proud to be here.
Yeah. So Pensacola Little Theater, which isn't so little anymore.
Well, you know, it's never been little. Pensacola Little Theater is a traditional name. During the WPA in the 30s, that was Roosevelt's Putting Americans Back to Work.
Mm-hmm.
And little theaters were formed all over the country. One of the ways to put Americans to work when there weren't factory jobs was through arts and culture. And that's when you explore big cities, you'll see murals and statues and parks. And those are the sorts of things that Roosevelt made sure happened in order to keep Americans working. And little theaters were part of that. And Pensacola Little Theater has been in existence since 1936.
Wow.
In fact, the longest continuously running community theater in the Southeast.
Holy cow. Oh, well, yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. We're currently housed in the Pensacola Cultural Center. And
Which is a really neat building.
It's a really great building. That building was actually built in 1911, and it was originally the Court of Records and the County Jail.
Yeah.
Across the street's the Museum of Art, and that was the city jail. So apparently that's where all the bad guys hung out.
That's all right.
But
it's a good corner now.
It's a great corner. It's the big three-story white historic building with a green awning over the front. Mm-hmm. We're at the corner of Jefferson and Main. And Pensacola Little Theater, we are proud to say we have burned the mortgage. We actually own that building now.
That's awesome.
And so we have a forever home. The organization itself, since 1936, has been continuously running, but has had lots of homes. We've had to be migrants. We performed at the Chamber of Commerce. We performed at the old San Carlos Hotel.
Wow. That's the first time I've heard that name in years.
In years, yeah.
Yeah.
After World War II, we had a Quonset hut, which still exists. It's across the street on E Street from the old Hallmark Elementary School.
Oh, yes.
But when it would rain, the water would just sort of like run right down the aisles underneath people's feet, apparently. And
just lift your shoes.
Right. And then in 1977, PLT moved to the old Florida Theater, not the Rex Theater, but the old Florida Theater. That
was where I saw my first Pensacola Little Theater show.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then it was in the 80s that the culture in Pensacola was starting to rebuild. And there were a number of arts organizations and nonprofits that didn't have a home. And so the city sold this dilapidated building to Pensacola Little Theater for $1. But then, of course, the mortgage was to make it into a theater inside, right?
Yeah.
And we currently still house Ballet Pensacola, has the whole third floor. That's where their home and studios are. And that's become an amazing, not only educational resource, but professional ballet company. And then a lot of people downtown are familiar with Portobello Market, which is our lunchtime restaurant that is in the lobby of the theater. And then we are always a part of Pensacola's walking history and ghost stories because we have our own ghost. So
how's that working out?
It works out really good. We've been doing a lot of research on the ghost just because I'm actually new to the artistic director position that I'm in. And
not sure if there's a spirit policy in your handbook.
Well, it has to do with really exploring the building and the history of the organization.
Yeah. What's the story on the ghost?
Okay, so we're going to go ghost story first.
Yeah, sure, why not?
Our ghost is Jose Poole, and he was the last person who was executed at the jail. And he was executed July 30th, 1920. And
That's some unfinished business.
Yeah.
Well, he does have unfinished business. He was actually executed for killing his brother. And we recently did the fun research to go back because the ghost story has sort of changed. And because we're on ghost followers radar, we recently had a paranormal team that paid for the opportunity to stay in the building overnight and brought all their little twitchy machines and all that stuff.
And they twitched, didn't
they? And they did. They got some readings. Apparently, we have a number of spirits in our building. Mm. But Hosea is definitely there. And so we wanted to find out how much of what the paranormals found out was based on fact and how much of it was based on Wikipedia.
Sure.
Also known as fiction.
See? Da-da-da-da. And I've actually been involved with Pensacola Little Theater since the mid-90s.
Yeah.
And so I've heard lots of different versions of the ghost story as well. And there's also a little girl that's been sighted 3 or 4 times in the building. And so, again, it's always fun to find out where the basis of those stories are. So Hosea Poole is a real person. One of the things that's interesting is that the story has, developed over the year. Everybody knows he's Hosea, but it's sort of morphed where we were calling him Jose. And it turns out that he was Hosea,
yeah,
from the Bible. And he was probably actually, a Black American, mm-hmm, versus a Mexican American. But he was in jail for killing his brother Albert. And, we went back, we found old News Journal articles about his trial and his execution.
That's
and so
cool.
We are looking for the, trial transcript in the Court of Records.
Oh, wow.
So he was real. He was actually housed there. He was actually only in jail because he stole a bicycle, but he escaped or walked out of the furnace room one night and met his brother down at Muskogee Wharf, where those mansions are sticking out in the bay now.
Uh-huh.
That was an actual wharf back then. And he killed his brother with an axe, literally an axe murderer, and tied the axe.
So perfect for Halloween.
People love this story. So, but he is more of a poltergeist for us. He's not a mean ghost.
Hope not, because it would really affect ticket sales, right?
Yeah.
Well, you know, and people have either seen him. We usually see him on the third floor, which is apropos because the gallows were on the third floor of the building.
Yeah.
And then, although the thing that most excited me was that I'd always been told that the area where Portobello Market is now, uh-huh, was the exercise and execution yard. But it turns out that the executions actually took place in a small room, like a death chamber, the newspaper called
right.
it. That was too
small.
It's
not where your office is now, is it?
Huh? No, actually, okay. It's on the third floor of LA.
So you've become real good friends with the spirit then.
I have my own story that we won't tell on the radio. But
sure.
Anyway, so Jose is there and he tries to be a friendly ghost, but it's simple things like the building is, we have a security team, the building is completely locked up and you come in the morning and every light in the building is turned on. Or you're sitting in the office and the elevator goes to the third floor and back down for no reason. Hmm. Things like that. There have been people who have been on stage and they ask who was sitting in the balcony and the balcony was locked. Nobody was in the balcony.
Right.
So there have been different sightings like that where it's just the essence of something else going on in there.
Very neat.
And same thing with the little girl. The little girl, there's no reason for a little girl to be in the building. And she's been sighted 3 or 4 times. Yeah. So.
Wow.
But the block was other things. When UWF did their archaeological dig in the early 90s, when they were redoing the building, they found a cistern from 1898, which predates the building. So it's possible that there was a home there or a different kind of building.
Right.
It's also on Main Street, which has always been very busy.
Sure.
It was right there where the trains and the horse cars and trolleys and all that stuff that were serving the port and the harbor in all historic days. So it's possible maybe she got run over by something.
Well, and I noticed this year driving around too, and I don't know if they did last year, but we have a ghost tour now.
Yes, lots. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's walking ghost
tours.
So
apparently we're pretty active, you know, town for that kind of stuff.
I mean, Pensacola is hundreds of years old.
Yeah.
So there's lots of manifestations that you can't describe other than telling your good story. So.
Yeah. All right, well, let's talk about not so manifested and some reality.
Yeah, let's talk about PLT.
Yeah, let's talk about PLT.
Oh,
yeah. So, although that was like a great story, there really was.
It is. Well, and that's fine.
I can't
make
this stuff up. So
we're going to have to step it up, Lee.
I know.
So I'm the artistic director at Pensacola Little Theater. And as I said, I've actually been a volunteer with PLT since the mid-90s.
Yeah.
And
well, it was mostly a volunteer organization.
Well,
it is
a volunteer organization. And when PLT moved into the solid building, there needed to be official management. Community theater is, by definition, volunteer theater.
Sure.
We don't pay our actors or designers or directors even. The only people that currently get paid are the administrative staff. And then when we're doing a show, we do pay our musicians the standard pay.
Sure.
So we get the same. Our pit is made up of the same people that play for the symphony and the colleges and the opera.
They're
so professionals.
Cool.
Yeah.
Which is so cool.
We don't do recorded music. It's all live music.
Yeah.
So that's brilliant. But our actors and designers, the directors, thousands and thousands of hours every year. We estimate about 80,000 volunteer hours a year to put on the productions that we put on. We do 14 to 18 titles a year. We have a whole spectrum of art that we offer the community. Little theater does not mean children's theater. It just means volunteer theater. Now, that doesn't mean we don't serve our kids. We have our main stage season, our plays that are selected that are the traditional musicals, comedies, dramas, the things that you would see on Broadway.
Right.
Our Treehouse is our family-oriented theater. That doesn't mean that it's all children that are in it. For instance, we just finished Once Upon a Mattress, and the youngest person in that show was 14, but it was about the, it's a stylized version of The Princess and the Pea. So you have to have actors who are old enough to look like they want to get married. and you know, the Evil Queen, it was super fun, and you have the Mute King and all that. So, and that was actually done on our main stage, but it was part of our Treehouse series. And then we have our Studio 400, which is the other end of the spectrum, and that's our black box theater. We do it in smaller space. We have smaller audiences. It is mature production. Sometimes the language and content can be a little bluer.
It's right up my alley.
Right? And generally not the musicals. And black box theater allows the audience to use their own imaginations in a way, because it's literally what it sounds like. It's a black stage with black curtains, and usually even the furniture is black.
Right.
So the details you have to fill in, and it's all about the language. So sometimes it's smaller plays. Sometimes it's even local plays. It's our opportunity to showcase local playwrights. And then we also have education. We offer after school acting classes. We have a program for homeschool kids. We have our summer camps. We have audition classes. We have how to get into film. So we try to not only reach out to the community, but provide art for everybody's different taste and whatever. But it's all done by really talented volunteers. There was a letter in the news journal that tickled everybody on our side of the planet.
Even the guests?
Yes, actually. if you saw Seaplane, which was an amazing production that was recently done at the Sanger, well, the leads, all the actors there were paid. That was part of their production, but only the four leads that they recruited from Broadway were paid the giant salary. The rest of the players were the same players that play with us. They're local.
Yeah.
They were paid their local stipend to be a part of this professional production. We just are this amazing middle-sized city. We're not big enough where we can pay actors to do what they do. We can't, because we don't charge $100 a seat, so we can't afford a salary that base,
because
right?
Then I can go.
Exactly,
you know what I mean?
Exactly. But it's still people who have just chosen to stay here in Pensacola. They are teachers, doctors, students, professionals, engineers, architects. These are the people who have chosen another life path, but it doesn't mean that they don't have equal talent to other people who have chosen to starve to death in New York to do their art. So it's part of what makes our community whole, is to have that symphony, the opera, the ballet, the theater, the museum of art. We have, you want to write a book, you want to learn a language, you have to have a way to express your humanity that doesn't always fall in line with the widget that you make.
Well said. So I always like to think of it, excuse me, as this town has some serious heart, and it's always excuse me, and always has. And I grew up loving the arts. My dad, it was, and my mom too. She was the music blaring on Sunday morning, and so that I couldn't sleep in. And dad was taking me to the symphony and doing the art museums. And I was born in St. Louis, so we had that big city stuff. And I remember moving down here, and there wasn't much. But then I remember probably the explosion that happened maybe 10, 11 years ago here, where just the art community just, you know, they just did it. They blew up. They got big. And people started really getting interested and actually looking at it as an addition to the community.
Right. Well, it coincides with the blossoming of downtown Pensacola. Because I do remember, too, in the 70s, how derelict downtown was. Now, PLT still existed and the symphony was there. But we needed great artists like Maestro Peter Rubart to come in town. The growth and development of the ballet, the exponential growth of the opera. They used to just sing arias, and now they put on full-on professional operas in the Sanger with five-digit budgets, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And you think, well, opera in Pensacola? Why?
They should go check it out, though. It's actually kind of neat.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And that's neat. But it's the arts. I mean, people have, from the first guy who ever put his clay handprint on a cave wall to the rock that you banged on, human beings have to express the things that are unexpressible through words, through the arts.
I agree.
They have to pretend to be somebody else, which is what we do. That's storytelling. Before everybody, any written language was ever invented, there was storytelling. And how do you tell a story to someone who doesn't speak the same language you do? It's with your body. It's with your expression. Sometimes it's with dance. It's with singing. It's with chanting. Mm-hmm. And it's part of what makes us human beings all over the world is the way that we can tell our stories through music or art or, acting.
For those that can't see my face right now, I'm smiling from ear to ear because I'm totally picking up what you're throwing down. That's exactly what I was raised on. And I loved that concept of some things just can't be said in words.
That's right. Yeah.
So how does the theater work as a business then? Because you've got a lot on your plate.
We do. And we have a huge historic building. That's part of our obligation. So how do we put on the plays? The plays are expensive. We pay rights and royalties. We have to pay the orchestra. Although we don't, pay the actors on stage, we've got to pay to costume them. We've got to pay to build the sets.
Yeah.
So it's a combination of things. We do have our regular tenants, like the ballet, is a tenant of ours. So they pay rent for being there. So does Portobello Market and the other nonprofits that have lived in our building over the years. We rent out our rooms when they're not busy with our shows. And that's,
as I say, I've been to a couple events. Yep. Yeah. In the lobby in the front and then some in the other rooms.
Parties, weddings, meetings, other organizations. When they can squeeze into our very busy calendar, we'll even do performances on our stage. We had Pensacola High School actually there this past weekend doing a performance. And then, of course, we have an amazing board of directors, like all nonprofits. We are officially a nonprofit organization. We have a strong board of directors whose job is to keep us fiscally sound. And as I said, we've burned the mortgage, and we could not have done that without significant fiscal leadership. So our board of directors are the same local names that you see on lots of other nonprofit boards. Some of them are very dedicated. We have a number of board members who've been on the board for nearly two decades. Mm-hmm. And that sort of functionality of being passionate about having the arts, some of them, I tease them all the time because not all of them will even come to the shows. I'm like, how do you do this? And they believe what I do, which is that arts are important for our community.
Regardless of whether you're going to go or not.
Whether or not I sit in the seat, it's important for my city to be my city.
That's right.
So, we have, these bronze stars that are on the sidewalk outside of our building.
Seen those,
each
yes.
one of those is $10,000. So those are.
So go count the stars, everybody.
Right. And the fundraisers themselves, our board's job is to make sure that the organization remains fiscally sound so that it doesn't matter that the shows make money.
Yeah.
The shows are actually not the way that we make money. We want them to always come out in the black, but the shows are very expensive to put on if we're doing them at the quality that we want to. We've continually increased our professional level quality, but that requires some fiscal investment. Plus, as a theater, we're going to do Once Upon a Mattress, or we're going to do Sound of Music that maybe people know about, but I have to also be able to do a show that you've never heard of before, because that's my job as the artistic director, is to continually educate my community on what's new and interesting and other ways to tell the human story. And so it's Pensacola, so I've never heard of God of Carnage, or I never heard of 33 Variations, or I've never heard of Vanya, Sonia, Masha, and Spike. Mm-hmm. But these are shows that did.
As like, we all make strange faces when she's in here. Yes, like, we have never heard of them.
Exactly. But so here's the deal, is that I still need to do that show as part of my global mission to the community.
Sure.
Because everybody went to see Sound of Music for the first time, or Guys and Dolls for the first time, and you never saw it before. So I have to be your first time, and that's okay. But I also have to have the support to know that it's all right if that show just has a small audience that was brave enough to come. But if I do really good shows for Sound of Music or Guys and Dolls or White Christmas, whatever, so a title that you're familiar with, you trust me enough that you will come and see the thing you've never heard of before. And then the board's job is to make sure that we're fiscally sound enough that I can do those shows that may not necessarily come out in the black, but are part of our mission.
So how can the community help? Because I know the board can't do it all.
Well, in any way that they want to. A, we always are accepting new volunteers, hundreds and hundreds of volunteers a year. And that's everything from front of house, to, actually auditioning for a play.
Do we all get to wear cool black?
If you work backstage, you wear all black.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Cool. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm in.
Right. Buy a ticket and come see a show. Be brave enough and buy a ticket to a show you've never heard of before.
There you go. Like the three you just aforementioned.
Okay. Well, and then that's funny because that's a generational thing, because I was really surprised at the number of people who are like, White Christmas, what's that about? Like, are you kidding me?
Well.
You know, the movie that's been around since 1941?
Yeah.
That one.
That one.
You can send a donation. You can follow us on Facebook. You can volunteer to be a part of our board. If you're a significant business person who loves the arts and thinks arts are important for the community, serve on a nonprofit board and reach out one more way. For some of our people who don't want to come to plays, but they do like to play with the board, we have two giant fundraisers a year. One is our raffle, which we're currently selling tickets for right now, and that's a trip to New York. Or you can take $4,000 cash and run with it.
Oh, I saw that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the other one in the spring is become our new tradition, and it's called Life is a Cabaret. And it's when we turn the whole building into a giant party. Every room is a different theme, and it's a high-ticket thing when we usually have pretend gambling, and we usually have lots of open bars, and everybody's
plus
dressed
a costume.
Up.
I was going to say
people hanging by silks in the ceiling.
Yes. A friend of mine did the silks of that.
Yes. So, if you want to donate something to us, like costumes, lumber, paint, expertise,
nails, hammers,
sound,
even
simple things like, you know, maybe it's time to replace the carpets and you want to be a sponsor at a level where you say carpets at the theater provided by all of those sorts of ways, to, help us stay viable and vibrant. Is part of what we're doing. We're very excited about being fiscally sound, but it's a big old building, and we're always looking for continual support in every way possible, from $0 to lots of digits.
Seeley, you're gonna have to go hang out with her. She's got this nonprofit thing down. So what shows are you guys have now, or what's coming up? I mean, I know we're rolling into the holidays, and you guys are doing, and then we've got spring around the corner.
Right, exactly. Well, coming up for October, our Halloween production is actually Ballet Pensacola is doing The Headless Horseman, and that's their Fufu Festival entry. And the Little Theater at the, we're simultaneously running, our theater entry is called Always a Bridesmaid, and that's starring, local, benefactress Valerie Russenberger. And some of her good friends, including me. And that will be in the MC Blanchard courtroom. And it is all about four girlfriends who promised, when they didn't get dates to the senior prom, they got into dad's wine, and they promised each other that they would always be each other's bridesmaids. Well, it's 30 years later, and they're still bridesmaiding. So it's pretty funny. There is the premise of the ugly bridesmaid's dress and the bridesmaid's revenge, and but also just four women who have dedicated their lives to each other. And it's all the archetypes, super fun, super funny. And then our big holiday production coming up in December will be White Christmas, Irving Berlin's White Christmas.
What's that? I got in there first.
I am not that generation. I know what you're talking about.
It's the first time that we've done it. It actually has not been a stage production for that many years, but it was quite successful on Broadway, as you might imagine. And we were very excited to have full orchestra and singing and dancing and the traditional songs. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas.
Yeah, so I can see my kids glazing over right now.
So hoping that will be something that people look forward to. We don't do the same Christmas show every year, but we do rotate four or five favorite titles. And so we don't want to wear anybody down with,
yeah,
the same title.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, that's the point.
We love having
it's here.
In
come
the
see it. Why? You know, it's supply and demand, and then it's. But you also create that. Oh, I need to get there. I need to see this because it's only in the theaters for so long.
Right. So we've got titles to go all the way through to next August. So visit our website at PensacolaLittleTheater.org, and that's theater spelled with an R E at the end. You can also buy tickets.
I'm lost now.
Well,
just kidding.
It's a whole British thing, you know, but again, it goes back to that traditional name.
Yeah.
Theater with the E R is the room, and theatre with the R E is
The actual ensemble. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We also have a Facebook page, like our Facebook page. We do a lot of communicating through that. And, you can join our mailing list. We send out, through Constant Contact, a regular newsletter. And if you don't have any electronic ways to communicate and you're just listening to us on the radio today, then just give me a call at 434-0257. I'd be happy to make sure that you get on our snail mail list.
Or stop by and bring the guests some snacks.
That's right. Come to Portobello Market for lunch and then ask for Kathy and I will walk you around.
Take the to-go box upstairs, huh?
Yep. Get your deets.
Very neat. Well, ladies, I'd like to thank all three of you for being here today. Very much.
Thanks for having us.
And, great stories, ghosts, silks, fighter jets. I mean, I did not think of any of this stuff was going to come up today as we lined all of this stuff up.
Kind
together,
of intimidating.
I know. Yeah.
What do you got?
I do the radio too. So, and probably stuff we're not going to talk about on the radio. So, again, thank you all for coming in today. If, you want to find us, we're at Pecola Radio X. Our website where all of this will be broadcasted again later today is pensacola.businessradiox.com. And you can find us on Facebook at Pensacola Business Radio. So again, thanks for coming in. You guys have a wonderful day and I'll try to not take the book too long and we'll actually give it to somebody.
I want to hear that.
I'll maybe come and hang out backstage and wear black and then
come on in.
You're going to have to just pick a language and teach me. So
excellent.
That'll work.
Thanks, Keith.
Okay. All right. Well, this has been Pensacola Business Radio, where business is good and your work matters. Mm-hmm.